just what Paul Maneri and LSU baseball needed. Good pitching, shutouts. Now the showdown for Texas A&M, weather permitting. We'll get an update. Anthony Davis flipping the Pelican to a fan. We'll get the inside skinny on that. We're a month away from the run for the roses. We got to give you some early leading candidates. And Russell Wilson wants a new contract. The Schwab breaks it all down. Today, Thursday, April 4th, 2019.
Runners second and third. Two outs, bottom of the seventh. Another payoff delivery on its way. A little check swing, slow bouncer to third. Actually, the shortstop, Montillo, will throw to first. Duplantis beats it out. Coming in to score is Beloso. It's 1-0 Tigers.
Trouble off the bat there.
Now Trey Young gets it to John Collins in the middle. Hands it out to Kevin Herter. Back over to Trey. Left side three. Bang! Trey does it again. A minute 32 remaining. 31 points for Trey Young.
The Rockets up 25. Paul looks to make it 28. And he'll do so. Chris Paul with seven. Make it now 8 field goals in the game. Last night he only had 3. It's a 24-point night.
Yeah, for a lot of teams in the NBA, it's an exciting time. For a lot of other teams, it's like, just get me to the finish line. And for the New Orleans Pelicans, just 3 games left in the regular season, and we can mercifully put this thing behind us. Yes, indeed. Welcome. Good afternoon, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages. Alongside my producer extraordinaire in the 237 Roof Studios, that's where Clint Domain is making everything run smoothly. Yours truly here, Studio 1A. It's a Thursday, and my goodness gracious, when it rains, it just pours. So I hope you all are high and dry wherever you may be. But it's not done. It's still going to be here off and on all day, all night, and into tomorrow. So baseball, keep your fingers and toes crossed that games will be able to be played. If not, may have to push them back to Saturday. May have to do a doubleheader. Coming up in just a little bit, George Washington and Lindenwood will be competing in the NCAA Regional Gymnastics Championships. The winner survives to advance to Friday when the number one seed in the regional, the LSU gymnastics team, gets their tournament underway. Yes, indeed. Anyway, great to be with you. We have a busy show planned for you and for yours. The media, meeting with Paul Maneri shortly. We'll catch up with Wilson Alexander prior to that of the Advocate. LSU gets a 2-0 win, back-to-back shutouts, 9-0 over Grambling, 2-0 over South Alabama. Pitching staff did yeoman's work, just what Paul Maneri ordered, what he would like to have had. Didn't have to extend arms, didn't have to go deep into the bullpen, got everybody a little bit of work, and now they'll be ready to go. They'll take some batting practice inside their indoor facility today. There ain't no baseball today. The tarp is out, and the rains have put a crimp on that. The Pelicans lost again. Anthony Davis leaving the court. Nobody in the stands, so you can hear anything. You can hear a pin drop, and some fan apparently tried to get the attention of Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis ignored. Then all of a sudden he screamed a four-letter word that's followed by you, and Anthony Davis reacted with the big middle Pelican finger directed toward the fan. Andrew Lopez was there. He's got the inside skinny on that. Plus the candidates have been named for the new general manager position. There's about 6 of them being interviewed as we speak, and we'll get the inside on that. Again, I said it before and I'll say it again. Whoever he is, He needs to do everything in his power to try to work out a trade with whoever gets the number one pick in the draft and offer Anthony Davis and whatever and get Zion Williamson, because Zion Williamson will keep basketball relevant, exciting, and watchable in a city that craves stardom. You can't have a run-of-the-mill team in this town. You got to have a superstar, and Zion Williamson certainly moves the meter when that's concerned. So we'll talk to Andrew Lopez about that. We're a month away from the Kentucky Derby. We'll head out west. Our good friend, the handicapper extraordinaire, Michael Bakeshock of Bakeshock Racing, will join us and give us some of the contenders that he believes are viable for this run for the roses. Yes, indeed. And then Frank Schwab as well will join us to talk all things NFL. Naz Reid, as we were off the air, Naz Reid declared himself going to the NBA. He said, I'm done with college basketball. I want to go pursue my dream. And good for him. And if that's what he wants, good for him. The NBA always drafts on potential. So he'll be a late first-round pick, maybe a high second-round pick. I did not see it on a consistent basis, game in, game out. There were great moments, and then there were moments when he was invisible. So the jury is out in my book on Naz Reid. I wish him nothing but the best. Nothing but the best. We do not report rumors. We only comment on facts after. We don't break stories. I just don't. We have opinions on events that happen. There's all kind of rumors circulating. The LSU basketball program, the LSU's athletic department administration, there's all kind of rumors circulating. Everybody has an opinion. Everybody has a source on matters. All I know is nothing concrete has come about. Nothing still has come from any person of authority dealing with LSU basketball. Will Wade's not saying anything. Joe Oliva's not saying anything. F. King Alexander's not saying anything. Board of Supervisor members are not saying anything. The governor's not saying anything. All the money people aren't saying anything. All the people that stir the drink that runs that athletic department aren't saying a word. It is the best-kept secret I've ever heard coming out of LSU athletics. For whatever reason, mum's the word. But again, let me give you important dates. April 17th is a Wednesday. That is National Signing Day for college basketball. April 22nd is a Monday. That is the start of that federal trial on the FBI wiretapping, of which Will Wade has been subpoenaed to, in theory, speak on his behalf for the defense. I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Everybody's calling me, asking me. Again, I don't have a clue. I've heard rumors from people that I value, that I trust, but I'm not here in the rumor business. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen here. We will see. But it's another day and more silence. Naz Reid got the ball rolling with his declaration to go into the NBA. Or will there be others that soon declare? Time will tell. Time will tell. We are brought to you by Hooters. Hooters just makes you happy. Hooters with baseball, the NCAA Final Four, all will be there on their big plethora of televisions throughout the newly renovated, beautiful Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. It is the best. We'll take a time out here. When we come back, LSU baseball gets another win, and Antoine DePlantis has all of a sudden found the long ball. We'll delve into it next with Wilson Alexander of The Advocate here on the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Helfrich Show. Live and local, 103.7 The Game.
welcome back. Thank goodness they got baseball in yesterday at Alec Box Stadium, Skip Bertman Field, because the monsoons have hit. Ain't no baseball going on today, and we'll have to wait and see and keep our fingers crossed for the weekend as Texas A&M comes to town. I don't know how they're going to do it, but they're going to try and get these games in. We'll see. Come on, Mother Nature, clear a path for us. But the Tigers, back-to-back shutouts, and a local Acadiana boy has found a home run swing. So let's get all the latest information from the Advocate's Wilson Alexander. Wilson, thanks for the time. Good afternoon, buddy. How are you?
Appreciate you having me on. I'm all right. How are you?
I mean, Paul Maneri and Alan Dunn couldn't have asked for anything better against Grambling in South Alabama, right, as far as their pitching is concerned. Back-to-back shutouts, and nobody extended, and the bullpen ought to be fresh and ready to go.
It was quite literally exactly what they wanted. Paul said last night that, you know, when they looked kind of back over the last 2 days, they had a plan, and it was pretty much executed to perfection by that pitching staff, which is what you get, you know, when you throw a shutout two in a row. But more importantly than even throwing two shutouts, they didn't overextend like you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Clay Moffitt, have they found a diamond in the rough, or was that just a – what is your impression there?
I mean, it's kind of surprising, honestly. Like, I mean, Clay, he's known more for being in the middle of that pregame, like, hype huddle and sort of being the emotional leader of this team in the way he just wears everything on his sleeve and loves LSU more than seemingly anything in the world. In last year he comes to LSU after playing at Eunice for a few years and having all these injuries, and he's been pitching well, and I don't know – like, if he's going to make an impression or, you know, make any appearances, really, like, significant ones in the weekend, like, you know, series. Mm-hmm. But he definitely has been helping on the in the middle of the week.
Wilson Alexander, kind enough to join us. How do you guys occupy your time when there's all these lightning delays? And, I mean, that's what drives me crazy about baseball. I mean, it drives me crazy.
Yeah, I mean, we get work done, we goof off.
Well, good. I hope more goofing off sometimes. But look, there's a kid that grew up in Lafayette, and his freshman year hit two home runs. His sophomore mm-hmm. year hit two home runs. His junior year hit two home runs. Midway through his senior season, this little skinny kid's hit seven home runs. What the heck's happened to Antoine Duplantis?
Well, it's kind of interesting. And it's a few things sort of working in tandem. During the offseason, Antoine got stronger with his lower body. Still not so much that he's got, like, tree trunk legs, but it isn't surprising when you think about his family and sort of the genetics in that track family that he's got really explosive legs and an explosive lower body. And so he worked a lot on that over the off season. And I mean, baseball power comes from your legs anyway, not so much your arms, because of the torque that you need to create. And so he worked on that, and then they sort of adjusted his swing a little bit to keep his bat in the strike zone longer, which helps him adjust to off speed pitches and not pull out of it so quickly. And so that also so he doesn't hit everything the other way, which is what he did for most of his career, which was really mm-hmm. effective, but it wasn't conducive to hitting home runs. And so those two things have just sort of combined, and he's gotten some good pitches to hit, and he's just hit seven home runs. And they're not none of them have been intentional. He doesn't go up there hacking, looking to hit one out. He usually tries to hit the middle away. But something about that approach, working with the other things that he's done to his swing and his body, he's got seven homers.
it's amazing. How does he feel about it when you ask him the questions? Is that something he expected, or is it just that they take it off as kind of jokingly? Or what's his reaction to all this?
He laughs mostly. He said that he wouldn't have been surprised if he'd hit more homers this year because of those things that he did. But mm-hmm. no one, including Antoine on the LSU baseball team, expected him to have seven, like, halfway through the year. But he thinks it's fun. I mean, but it's also kind of funny. He said that Zach Watson told him, I'll trade home runs for hits. And Antoine's like, sure, fine, yeah, take them. because he doesn't care about hitting homers. They're just sort of there. But it's kind of this funny thing amongst the team.
Is he the ideal leadoff hitter? I mean, seriously. I mean, they put him in a whole different spot. But when he leads off, man, that seems to be the spot for him to me.
Yeah, I mean, it was working fine for most of the year when Josh Smith was leading off and Anton was batting third. And then Josh wasn't getting on base as much, and they also wanted him to be able to swing a little bit more freely instead of just focused on getting on base all the time. Antoine doesn't think much about that leadoff spot, though. I asked him, I was like, hey, do you like batting leadoff? And he's like, the only at-bat's the different is the first one. That was his response. I mean, he just doesn't really care. He'll bat anywhere in the lineup, and probably having that approach is good for batting leadoff because he's not putting, I guess, too much pressure on himself.
Yeah, I think you see more fastballs when you're the leadoff hitter that first time out, and then after that, you're right. That makes perfect sense. Wilson Alexander of The Advocate joining us. So here we are. There was a turning point. It didn't look very good for LSU baseball. They lost those games, and they go to Starkville, lose the first one, and then they turn things around. Do you sense a more confident team? Do you sense a team that's starting now to believe in and of itself more so than maybe in the past?
Well, I think this team has always believed in itself. However, this has definitely helped. You would ask them, you know, even when things weren't going great, when they couldn't just put the pitching staff and the hitting all together at one time, because for the first, I guess, half of the season, they were sort of living separately. But they kept saying, you know, once this gets together, once we're playing cohesive baseball and complete baseball, like, we're going to be good. And then, sure enough, that's what happened in those final two games, Mississippi State. And now I think that has happened. They are feeling more confident. They've said they feel more confident because they actually finally put it all together and, like, see, this is what we can do when we pitch well and we hit well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Boy, the pitching's been out of sight of late, and I think the job that Eric Walker did on Sunday just gives this team even more confidence. I've got to believe that they're set now in their rotation. I don't know what's going on with Jaden Hill. I don't know what his status is. Have you heard anything more on him?
We asked Paul about Jaden and Landon Marceau and Chase Costello, three freshmen they expected to rely on a lot this year. When we last had an availability Monday, and I'm sure people will ask again today when we talk to them about an hour, there's still no updates on those three. We've seen Landon do some sort of pre-throwing things with weighted balls and that sort of stuff, but Paul has no timetable on their return. And so for now, yeah, I mean, the weekend rotation's got to be Zach Hess, Cole Henry, and Eric Walker, because who else are you going to put out there? And as long as those three keep pitching well, then they're fine. The problem is going to be if there's a game when one of them doesn't pitch well and that taxes out the bullpen, and then it's like, okay, what do you do in the midweek when you already need your bullpen to do a lot of work? So they've been playing with fire a little bit, and it makes Paul Maneri nervous. Right now it's okay, but they definitely want to get those three freshmen back as soon as possible.
Yeah, and Zach Hess. Is it a roller coaster ride? I mean, great one day, the next great one. You know what I mean? Is that just not? Is he pitching consistently, or is it what's going on there?
Well, it's interesting. So, I mean, if you take a step back and really look at the last 2 years, it has been just completely up and down, and that's what we've kind of gotten this year out of him too. When you sort of zero in just on this year, you have to take into account, okay, he begins the year, he suffers a groin injury late during preseason practice, so he's not 100% for the first couple of weeks. And then against Texas, when he's starting to feel better, the ball, it's a line drive hit right off of his pitching arm, and that's going to hurt. And so that kind of messed him up against Texas. And then,
but he was great against Georgia. He was great,
Yeah, no, I mean,
I thought maybe that had turned the corner.
Right, and then against State, he gave up three home runs. So it's kind of interesting. Like, so he pitched great against Georgia, and he pitched really well against Kentucky, and he still pitched okay against State other than those three home runs, just, you know, those three swings. But don't know, it's tough to make of what Hess, when Hess is on, he's great, but that's kind of what he's had, you know, he's done his entire career. It's like when he's on, he's great, and when he's off, he's not.
Yeah, I don't know Zach Hess from a man on the moon. I know he's talented. Is it as simple of a thing as to say, look, that Friday night spot's too much pressure? What if we put him out, put Eric Walker on a Friday night and put Zach Hess on a Sunday? Less pressure, although, you know, that every game's important, but, man, that Friday night game, it seems like Walker has the mentality of being able to handle that pressure. Does that make any sense at all?
Right. Well, just going off of what LSU said, I'll say this. The reason why they have it this way, Zach Hess does have the mentality to pitch Friday night. Like, he loves the pressure, and he sort of, you know, he wants that on him. He wants to be the Friday night guy. Not to say that Eric doesn't, but Paul said after Eric, you know, went out against Mississippi State and was just phenomenal, that Eric is a really good Sunday pitcher because he doesn't have the stuff that Zach had. When his slider is working, Zach has just really great stuff. And Eric, because he doesn't pitch as fast, he's really, Paul thinks, is really good on Sundays, especially after like an emotional Friday and an emotional Saturday. You know, you're at the end of the series, and then Eric Walker throwing 88 miles an hour, hitting his spots on the, you know, on the edges of the plate, can just sort of lull a team into a sleep. And so they like Eric on Sunday for that reason.
Okay. All right. Makes perfect sense. All right. Well, go have fun inside today, because it ain't no baseball today. But what are you hearing about the weekend? Man, it's going to be tough
nothing
to get
yet.
Three games in.
I know nothing. We haven't nothing yet, but we'll be sure to ask about it here, you know, in a little bit, because I'm definitely interested to see if they're actually going to be able to play some baseball this weekend.
I'm with you, Wilson Alexander. Thank you. I know it is late nights and early afternoons, but we greatly appreciate the time. Keep up the great work with the Advocate, buddy. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you. Y'all have a great day.
All right, you too, Wilson Alexander, the Advocate, LSU baseball, getting ready to take on Texas A&M Friday, Saturday, Sunday, all three games here on 103.7 The Game. But stay tuned. They may have to shuffle things around. They may have to play two on one day. Just wait and see. Mother Nature will dictate an awful lot this weekend. Indoors, Anthony Davis had something to give to a Pelican fan or two. Andrew Lopez joins us next. The Pelican to the fans. Stay with us.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Holtberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
The NBA regular season is about to come to a close. Just a few more games left in this miserable New Orleans Pelican season that's just been absolutely befuddling and crazy. But a in-street close, Anthony Davis leaving the game, walking off the court, flips the middle Pelican finger at a fan. So I had to call Andrew Lopez and get the inside information on what's going on. Andrew, thanks for the day. Good time. Good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I am good. The middle Pelican. That's a new one.
When Anthony Davis gives the middle Pelican, you can't miss it because he's got big mitts, if you know what I mean. So what's the story behind Anthony Davis and a fan or fans?
Well, I will say this. It appears to be one fan going back and talking to some people and talk to a couple people around AD, a couple people with the team, and it does seem like Anthony was walking off the court, and a fan yelled an expletive at him, a certain four-letter word, you know, that's sometimes followed with you, directed at Anthony Davis, and it was a simple reaction. It was something that, you know, he shouldn't do. As an NBA player, they're kind of taught. I mean, when you're a public figure, you have some of these sort of things directed towards you, and it was something he shouldn't have did, but he did it. I mean, you can kind of understand the amount of things that have probably been hurled and said towards him in the last, you know, 2 months inside that arena, and this was kind of one of those things where he got caught. I mean, there just happened to be a guy with a camera right there, and the point of it is he's got to be better. I don't think it's a situation where the fan is going to be kicked out or banned from the arena or anything like that. The fans do kind of need to, have to be a little bit better. I think there does need to be a better discussion of fan and players, how you sort of interact. But that's kind of where it came down. He reacted to something that was said to him. And you could tell it's not an AD versus New Orleans situation, because even 2 minutes later, I mean 2 seconds later, he does that to the fan, and then he high-fives like three or four more fans before he gets in the tunnel. So it's clearly not a thing against New Orleans itself. It was just, you know, something he kind of got caught up in, and, you know, right there in a, you know, wrong spot a long time.
And let's be honest, there's not too many people going to the game, so he can hear things. Normally, there's a lot of people there, and all the sound kind of muddles together, and you can't differentiate anything. But nobody's going to those games, so you can certainly hear when an expletive is directed your way.
Yeah, and the other thing is, and this is the part that they haven't been able to confirm just yet. The NBA is working on it. The Pelicans are working on it. It does seem like the guy was trying to call for AD. AD didn't respond right away, and then the guy might have kind of flipped him off, and then AD's responding to the guy flipping. Again, he is responding to something that a fan is doing. He just has to, and he knows, I think, that he has to be better than that in that situation. And I think he understands that, and I think the Pelicans kind of know where everything is right now.
Andrew Lopez, NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune. Okay, got to hire a general manager. He's going to have complete autonomy. Mickey Loomis is going to stick on the football side of things. Where are we in that pursuit of a GM?
Well, they have started this morning. As of this morning, the names are on the list now. And we have the six names that they started off. It was 9 o'clock this morning, and according to our Jeff Duncan, is when they started with their interview process. Danny Ferry, David Griffin, Larry Harris, Trajan Langdon, Gerson Rosas, and Tommy Shepard are the six names that the Pelicans are going to be interviewing for that vacant position. There could still be some situation where maybe Danny Ferry is the president, maybe Trajan Langdon is a GM. But it does look like whoever is going to get this hire is going to have the control. They're going to be the point person. It's not going to be they're not going to have to report to Mickey. They're not going to have to report to anybody. This person is going to be in control. They're going to report directly to Gale Benson. And if you look at that list, everybody on that list has experience or is highly regarded right now. Danny Ferry, David Griffin, Larry Harris, the three of those guys have all been GMs or presidents in this league. Rosas has been 16 years as with the Rockets. He's been Maury's right hand man for the last 7 to 8 years right now. Tommy Shepard's been, 16 years with Ernie Grunfeld. And then Langdon is kind of the hot name on the market, but a lot of people want him. He's also the executive of the year, in the G League. That does mean something when you're trying to develop a G League team under you right now. I mean, the Birmingham Future Pelicans, or whatever they're going to be called, is coming along in 2 or 3 years, and they start operating their own team out of Erie next year. So all of those things kind of go into it. Not a lot of surprises, but with right now with Phoenix and Washington both looking for GMs, you do kind of want to get this done sooner rather than later. And this is why, if you go back 2 months ago, this is why you got rid of Dell Demps when you did, so you can get the jump on anybody else that gets fired. Now, you're already doing interviews just 2 days after Washington's fired Ernie Grunfeld. So you want to get ahead of it, and that's exactly what they did here.
I'm curious as to who is sitting in those meetings to do these interviews, but it sounds like there's a possibility we could become the Duke of the Bayou. I mean, you got Okafor, you got Jackson, Trajan Langdon was a Dookie, Danny Ferry was a Dookie. Are we the Dookie of the Bayous?
I don't know, man. But if all that happens, then I just want to see who's going to be the first person to put a Coach K as the Pels coach rumor out.
No. This is all about getting Zion. Come on. That's what it's all about.
Of course it's all about getting Zion. If they get Zion, I'm buying a house because I'm never leaving this job.
And that's something that, I mean, that whoever the new GM is, he's got to make a run at that number one pick. Whoever gets it, he's got to do it, right? He's got to try because, to me, That's what the city of New Orleans is all about. We've had really good players, but nobody's moved the meter like this cat does, Zion. Yeah. Nobody does.
And that's nobody. And here's the thing about it. As good as Anthony Davis is, as good as Chris Paul is, when Chris Paul was here, he wasn't a marketable superstar the way he's kind of turned into with State Farm and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Anthony Davis, I think his biggest sponsorship is like Motor Oil, I think is the only commercial I've ever seen him on, maybe a Red Bull commercial
not here and there. Yeah, not very good.
Zion becomes easily a marketable star. And the problem, I think, sometimes when you're a guy like Anthony Davis, maybe you want to be universally loved. You want to be the guy. Okay, mm-hmm. But if you look at in the New Orleans market, if Anthony Davis walks down one side of the street and Alvin Kamara walks down the other side of the street,
no shot.
I think more people are going to go on the other side of the street where Alvin Kamara is. You don't have that kind of marketability that you would like as the guy. And I think Zion brings that off the bat, whether he's successful or not. He's going to bring marketability to your team. It's going to be easy to market that guy. He's going to have one of the biggest shoe contracts ever handed out to a rookie, probably the biggest shoe contract ever handed out to a rookie, one of the biggest shoe contracts, period, ever. So I think a lot of that kind of comes into play right there. Certain teams are not going to give that pick up. I think even if a Phoenix does it, you got to look into it. You got to see, you know, here you could have AD and Devin Booker. Go for it. AD, Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton. Mm-hmm. Go for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the Knicks get it here, take AD so you can get KD and Kyrie. You have to try everything you can to get that number one pick. And if not, there are a couple other guys you can build around if you get multiple lottery picks to set yourself up in the long term still.
He is Andrew Lopez, NOLA.com, the Times Picayune. What do you think is the savability, or is there no savability for Alvin Gentry?
It's all going to come down to who this coach, who the GM is, and I think that's the way to go about it. I don't think it's right to tell a GM coming in, hey, you have to keep Alvin. I think this is the way to go about it. You tell him, hey, look, if you like him, he can stay. If you don't like him, he's gone. And I think that's the way you have to go about it. If David Griffin has history with him, they were in Phoenix together. Danny Ferry obviously has a little bit of history with him from working with him now. So to me, that's where you have to kind of go with the line. You have to let this GM decide what he wants and what he feels comfortable with. If he likes AD, great. I mean, I'm sorry, if he likes Gentry, great. If he doesn't, you know, it's time to find somebody else.
I'm with you. Andrew Lopez, NOLA.com, the Times Picayune. I'm curious, Naz Reid declared for the NBA draft. You've watched him play. You've seen NBA players now all year long. I know the NBA draft's on potential. What do you think of Naz Reid?
He's a late first, early second guy to me. You kind of, all the questions that you had about Naz Reid, you didn't get them answered in the NCAA tournament,
especially as
Michigan State was able to just dominate LSU on the boards. And I think that's the thing. He shoots a little bit too, you know, you want your bigs to shoot. Okay. That's something you want your bigs to be able to do, in the current day NBA. You want your fours and your fives to have the ability to shoot. And if they can shoot it at a 34-36% clip, fantastic. If they shoot higher than that, you know, give them all the money in the world. But right now, Naz is, it was too on and off for me. It was too much where some of the banging down low didn't get settled. You want to see him be able to do that a little bit more. I know he's capable of it. I've seen him do it. But I want him to be a little bit more consistent in that aspect, and I think that's the biggest kind of question that I have, and I think that's the biggest question that NBA teams have going into this.
I just equate it to, like, this on the Pelicans. He'd have to play and guard a Julius Randle. How's he going to stop him?
Yeah.
I mean, Randle would chew him up and spit him out.
There's not many people that are going to stop Julius Randle coming out of full speed. But you're right. I mean, he's got to bang with those types of guys, and that's what I just don't see happening right now for me. I don't see him banging with the Julius Randles of the world and people like that. And, you know, like I said, I've seen him do it before. He has done it before, but I need him to do it at a consistent pace for him to justify me taking a first-round pick on him. The talent's there. Talent-wise, he is most certainly a first-round pick. It's just there's a little bit more questions that need to be answered for me.
Andrew Lopez, NOLA.com, the Times picking you. Anybody going to beat do you think Golden State is more vulnerable than ever? Just when you think they are, they just go ahead and take care of Denver and put them away. Do you think they're more vulnerable than ever before?
Not now. I think they're on a mission now. I think they've kind of heard the, oh, this is the year you can get them this year. No, you're not getting them this year. It's once DeMarcus locks in and starts putting up 28 and 12s, and they did what they were on a mission the other night against Denver. They were absolutely on a mission the other night against Denver. And when this team is locked in, they're just hard to stop. I'm not saying it's going to be 16-0, but it's going to be damn close when they decide, it's over for you guys.
Yeah. Who's your team coming out of the East? It's wide open, I think. Milwaukee, Toronto, Philly, Boston. You never know what you're going to get with the Celtics. Who do you like in the East?
Right now, I kind of like Toronto. They've been very impressive with Marc Gasol on the floor. If you'd have asked me 2 weeks ago, I would have said Milwaukee by far. I thought Milwaukee was the best team. I think Milwaukee can still be the best team in the East. It's just all those injuries kind of start to kind of wear on you. I mean, Mirotić is out. Milwaukee had to play Tim Frazier 53 minutes the other night. That's not great. That's not ideal that you have to play Tim Frazier 53 minutes. So once they get healthy, if they can be the top team, then I think Milwaukee is the way you go with that. But there is a lot kind of riding on health in that situation. But, you don't count out Philly. Philly has a star power. And then Boston can look like they can sweep everybody one night and then get swept the next night. So it'll be the first time in a few years that I'm very, very interested in watching the Eastern Conference playoffs.
I'm with you. I'm with you completely. One last thing on the Pelicans. During all this stuff, and a lot of players are getting more playing time than they ever, ever, ever imagined they could. Has anybody, do you think, improved their stock that maybe they would want to retain and keep for next year? Is it as simple to say that Okafor's had a heck of a year, or anybody else that's impressed you?
I got to give the nod to Christian Wood right now.
Okay.
Christian Wood comes in, he gets cut from that Milwaukee team in for some guys who, you wouldn't necessarily think that. He was averaging 29 and 14 in the G League, and you have to think, why is he the one who gets cut? It was a numbers game. And then he comes to New Orleans, and he's putting up ridiculous numbers. I mean, he was setting career highs overall in five games with the Pels. He's averaging 15.6 points, 7.8 rebounds, I think 1.6 blocks a game, and he's shooting it, I think it's from like 58% from the field. I mean, he's had a great game, and it's not just – I know a lot of times guys put up a lot of numbers late in the year, and people kind of just brush them off. They're racking up. I mean, he's going against teams who are trying to keep playoff spots. Like, people aren't just giving him points and rebounds and baskets. So he's at least a guy, I think, who is upped his stock the most to at least being a guy who, look, we got to have him in next year. And he is signed for next year. He's going to be in camp. There's not that many people on this team that are, when you look at the young guys, Cameron Williams is signed for next year, and Jahlil has a team option for next year, which they're more than likely to take at $1.7 million. Frank Jackson is going to come back. So of those guys, I think you got to look at Christian Wood. And as far as else, I think you got to have a long conversation with yourself about what you're going to do with Julius Randle. He's likely to opt out of that $9 million that he's owed next year. But, I mean, when he's putting up 21.5 points and 8 and almost 9 rebounds a night, I know his defense isn't the best in the world, but 21-9 is worth a lot of money, and you got to have that conversation with yourself to see how much money it's worth to you.
Vying for Zion, baby. That's all I'm talking about. Vying for Zion. And, we'll see. Andrew, just a few more games, baby. Then it's vacation
time. 3 left,
baby.
Trust me, I got the countdown.
Yeah, baby, just get through it, man. Get through it. And thank you for your time today. I appreciate it, buddy.
No problem.
All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back with more. Andrew Lopez, NOLA.com, the Times Picayune. Get Zion, baby. Get Zion. We'll be right back.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Holford Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. 53 minutes after the hour. Got some baseball going on as we speak. Top of the ninth, Detroit leading Kansas City 5-4. Bottom of the eighth, the Nationals leading the Mets 2-0. Top of the third, Baltimore with a 3-1 advantage over the Yankees. And batting in the bottom of the first, Boston put up two runs in the top. Oakland coming to the plate. It didn't take long in the Astros game last night. My goodness. A.J. Hinch and hitting coach Alex Cintron ejected after two consecutive pitches for arguing balls and strikes in the second inning of Wednesday's 4-0 loss at the Texas Rangers. You could see it with home plate umpire Ron Culpa staring at the dugout. And then you could see as A.J. Hinch was tossed, Hinch came out and he said, you know, I can do whatever I want. I can do whatever I want, said Culpa. I don't know if there's some vendetta here or not, but this guy Culpa needs to be. There's a way of going about things, and there's another way. And what the way he did, in my opinion, is the wrong way. As A.J. Hinch said, that's what he said, and that's apparently what he meant. He's in charge, and obviously you make a scene, I guess, so everybody has to pay attention. But we'll let the league sort it out. Astros were complaining about pitches and all that, but who doesn't, right? Who doesn't? It always builds up to a crescendo. Greg Popovich was ejected last night in the NBA for a minute and a half into it. How did he get ejected? A minute and a half into a game, other than the fact that Pop just didn't want to be there. He wanted the night off. He wanted to sit back and relax and let his assistant coaches run the show. He pulled a Gene Hackman in Hoosiers. Eject me. Get me out of here. I don't want to be here. So he said the magic word once, said the magic word twice, and boom, gone. That's a long grind, man. And I guess he just didn't want to be there. Didn't want to be there. It's the second fastest ever ejection. I think Flip Saunders was the late Flip Saunders was the earliest, just a little over a minute into a game. So you must really not want to be there, I'm telling you. So we'll see. A.J. Hinch got thrown out of a exhibition game, preseason game. And he gets thrown out again. So I think everybody needs to, whoo, as my daughter says, take a chill pill. Just relax, take a chill pill, and move on. We're going to talk about an interesting development that came from Bleacher Report on the not-so-pleasant relationship between Mike McCarthy, the head coach of the Green Bay Packers, and his quarterback, Aaron Rodgers. I mean, this goes way back, and it's an interesting, interesting article that doesn't paint a pretty picture of either one of the men, but particularly Aaron Rodgers, who, if you read the article, maybe not the greatest of teammates, thinks he's bigger, better, smarter than everybody else out there. So we'll talk to Frank Schwab about that in hour number two. Michael Bakeshock, we are a month away. The first Saturday in May is May the 4th, so we're a month away from the Run for the Roses. We'll give you a preview of that, plus Hot Topics, all coming your way, hour number two. The Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. 103.7 The Game, brought to you by Hooters. Hooters just makes you happy. We'll be right back.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown!
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Yes, indeed. Welcome, Acadiana. Hour number two of two, and away we go. School zones are in effect. The weather is awful. The roads are slick and wet. So be careful as you're out and about on the highways and byways. And thanks for joining us. A busy second hour planned for you and yours. If you missed hour number one, you missed the very latest on LSU baseball. You missed the very latest on the Pelicans as their search for a general manager has been narrowed down. Six candidates are out there, and they are interviewing them as we speak. It'll be a huge undertaking for whoever gets the role, because they've got to make a franchise-defining decision with how to deal with Anthony Davis. Are they going to go after the number one draft pick and get Zion Williamson? There's a lot out there. You can always go to 1037thegame.com and find those interviews up and about shortly. This hour, we'll talk thoroughbred horse racing, the Kentucky Derby challengers, and we'll talk all things NFL. But as we do each and every day, we start off hour number two with our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, producer extraordinaire. Button, please.
Here's today's hot topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Mr. Clint Domain, kind enough to run the show, and he gets things started off this afternoon. Good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
Good afternoon, Jordy. And you were talking about Zion Williamson, the possibility of him joining the Pels. Well, I'm seeing Mason Ginsberg of Bourbon Street Shots put this up just a little while ago, is a chart depicting the probability of Zion to the Pelicans at the table, and he actually has Zion to the Pelicans' likelihood 21.4%. You like those odds?
I'll go with that. That's better than 20%, better than 10%.
Yep.
So as long as there's a shot, they got to take a shot. They got to go for it.
Yeah, you really have to. You have to shoot your shot here in this situation, of course. You're going to wait until all the balls kind of get in place and you have probably the New York Knicks or the Cleveland Cavaliers have the number one pick. I still believe the Cavs have a chance of doing it somehow, some way. But
wouldn't that be something, sending Anthony Davis to Cleveland?
For that 1 year, you know?
Yeah, it'd be amazing.
And it'd be almost like sending him to the Toronto Raptors, Jordy.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that ain't going to happen. Cleveland's not going to give up that. No, no way.
I think they might have. Yeah, like I said, anyways. But, you know, we got to talk about the biggest, not really a surprise, if you will, Jordy, about Naz Reid declaring for the NBA draft. Did so on Instagram yesterday. But I want to kind of get your thoughts on what a ceiling is in the NBA draft, because it is an incredibly stacked class this year with three really good Duke players going to be declaring for the draft, a lot of other great players in there. Ja Morant probably going to wind up being the number two guy. But where does Naz Reid kind of fit in there in your mind?
I think they've got about 5 to 7 really good players, impact players, and then maybe not even that many. Then after that, it's always a roll of the dice. You got good talent, but you don't know how it's going to equate to the NBA. You just do not. Naz Reid, he'll get drafted. I'm going to go late first round, early second round. It's going to take a patient coach. He's going to have to cut his teeth in the G League for a while. You'll see him go up and down, up and down, up and down. I mean, Antonio Blakeney was a heck of a college basketball player for LSU, and he's had to work his way back and forth, back and forth. So Naz Reid wants to get to the league. Well, good for him. I think it's going to take him a while to become an efficient player. I don't know if he's ever going to be a star player, but I think he'll eventually end up making it and make a heck of a living doing so. So good for him. The question mark is, who's next and how many are next that are going to declare from LSU? That's the interesting question.
It really is, Jordy. We can talk about that a little bit down the line, Jordy. But I'm seeing this pop up just a few minutes ago, and that is about the NCAA. Another instance of them being absolutely ridiculous. Because
what they do now.
Kyle Guy, of a UVA star basketball player, he has to put his wedding registry on hold, Jordy, because the NCAA says wedding gifts, they're against the rules.
Oh.
Is it the most ridiculous load of malarkey you've ever heard in your life?
Well, first off, Mr. Guy should never have put it under his name. Should have put it under his fiance's name. I don't know what he's thinking. How much does he want from Bed Bath & Beyond? I mean, come on. Put it under your fiance, soon-to-be wife's name, and don't put it under your name. What is he doing? But that is ridiculous. Please.
Yeah,
well, yeah, that toaster... That toaster or that place setting, that's an illegal benefit. That's right. Can't do that.
Well, I'm sure it's more about the fact you're kind of having to deal with, like, his fiance might have put his name in it as well. I think it's just the fact that it's both of them. Again, it's ridiculous kind of talk about. But another thing that is absolutely ridiculous right now, Jordy, is the umpires in the MLB. You talked about it at the end of hour number one. I actually wound up getting something from AJ Hinch. Talking about the situation that wound up getting him and the hitting coach ejected in the ballgame.
We obviously had a disagreement with the strike zone early in both the top of the first and the bottom of the first. Our dugout will always be involved. Cintron got thrown. I didn't know what had happened, which is why I went out the first time. And then, the next couple pitches later, I'm out of the game. So, we know that you argue balls and strike is one thing when you get ejected more aggressively. It's disappointing.
Is it fastball to Gallo?
Yeah, it is disappointing. But when the ump was obviously seen saying, "I can do whatever I want. I can do whatever I want." That's just an ego trip, and he needs to take a seat. He needs to get suspended. You can't be having that kind of stuff. That's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
I mean, you add the fact that in between innings, after Gerrit Cole kind of got into the inning, he looked at the umpire, didn't say anything. But the second you had the umpire say something, he turned around, catcher turned around. The catcher wound up getting physically pushed by him, which I honestly, that is some grade A malarkey, a lot like what we're seeing with the NCAA, and it needs to be taken care of as soon as possible because that is just
suspended. He's got to be suspended.
Yeah. And
him out of the league completely.
That's what I think they should do, Jordy. Make a statement. Make an example out of him. That way we don't have these kind of issues happening throughout the season, especially against the Astros. Yeah.
Too many egos involved, and the umpires should never be the show. The fans, the players have to be the show. The umpires have to take a back seat. And if they take a back seat, I think you'll see some of the decorum from the managers and all take a step back as well. But the way they act right now, it's just infuriating. Everybody's going to blow up.
Also, get rid of Angel Hernandez. That's my next statement right there. Get rid of him,
absolutely.
Please. Looking over at the NBA, Jordy, we're getting closer to the end of the season. And I have to... Yes, I know you're looking forward to it, Jordy. Just let the season end already. But looking at the MVP race, Jordy, a lot of people are talking about it. It felt like it was James Harden's to lose at this point. But now a lot of people are saying, yet James Harden, Giannis Antetokounmpo, who you got?
I got Harden again. I just think the numbers he puts up are astronomical. And although Giannis is on the best team in the East, I think it'll be a very close race, but I think Harden will win it. The numbers, the way that he's put up on a consistent basis, the fact that he's got them as a number three seed right now when they had so many injuries, and he was just basically carrying the team by himself, that's hard to overcome. I'm going with James Harden.
I got to wind up going with the Greek Freak, or should I say the new Diesel, because you had Shaq wind up mentioning on his podcast that he was going to give him the namesake and let him be the new Diesel, the Greek Diesel, if you will. Call him Bio-Diesel, but okay, let's keep the original Diesel and make the Greek Freak Bio-Diesel, make him eco-friendly. But last one, Jordy.
Something.
Clemson football, Jordy, just got their national championship rings.
Right? Okay. And how bad are they?
No, they're fantastic, Jordy, because of one reason and one reason only. They say best ever on them, Jordy. That is definitely them throwing another dart at Alabama.
Oh, Dabo.
Dabo Swinney.
What are you doing?
I love him for that, Jordy. It's awesome.
Best ever. Okay. Well, they won more games than anybody else had. They went completely undefeated throughout the course of the season. So I guess they can say that. So good for Dabo. Good for them. Will they be back again next year? Probably so.
I hope
they
so, Jordy.
Quarterback.
I just want to see
a running back from Louisiana. Yep.
I just want to see Nick Saban just immediately just want to have that stink face look whenever he sees those while he's eating his oatmeal cream pies.
Oh, my goodness. That's all right, I got, there Jordan. You go. Nice job, my friend. Nice job. There's your Hot Topics, brought to you by the best hot sauce on the planet, Cajun Chef. Bring a small bottle with you wherever you go, because you know the B-Yards in St. Martinville have been doing it for nearly 90 years. A great product, a tradition-rich product. Do yourself a flavor. Bring some Cajun Chef hot sauce with you wherever you go. A month away from the Derby, who's the contenders next?
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
We're getting closer and closer to that. In fact, we're a month away. The first Saturday in May, May the 4th. That means it's time for the 145th running of the Kentucky Derby. So I thought, you know, a month away, let's get some information from one of the best known handicappers, in the social media sphere. He won the 2012 National Handicapping Championship. He also runs a handicapping website, BakeShockRacing.com. Our handicapper, our good friend, Michael Bakeshock, kind enough to join us. He's out on the West Coast, but he still has some time for us. Michael, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I'm great, Jordy. It's great to talk to you again.
Well, we're a month away, so we got the Santa Anita Derby running this weekend, and we've got some other races coming, but I just wanted to kind of see if we could separate and give us an idea of some of who are the contenders. And let's start off with By My Standards, who won the Louisiana Derby at the fairgrounds on March 23rd. Is By My Standards a viable contender?
I think so. I think I had picked him to run third in the Derby, so Pat Mohn back, but said that he would be a nice long shot, and he was 22-1. And he is an improving horse who can go the distance. He beat a really nice field. He'll be a big long shot in the Derby, but he's certainly a horse that would be on my radar to consider, depending on how he trains up to the Derby in a month.
Is there a horse out there that goes, okay, this is the one, or is this another year where we may have a different winner in each one of the Triple Crown races?
I think this is much more like a year where we don't have that horse that everybody's talking about. As a matter of fact, I think this is one of the years where there's 20 horses that I think could actually win the thing today. There's no American Pharoah. There's no Justify. There's really no the two-year-old champion from last year, Game Winner. He lost his first race this year, so he's got to come back and prove that, you know, he's as good as he was last year. It is a crazy year where I was going through the top, 25 or 30, and I couldn't say, okay, I'm throwing that one out, because there's 25 to 30 horses that, that can win. But this weekend is a good, it'll clear up the foggy picture, because we have three, races, one in Kentucky, one in New York, and one in California, where we can say, okay, these horses are pretenders, and these horses are contenders. So this hopefully this weekend will clear up some of the confusion.
You have to get points, and the top 20 point earners earn a spot in the Kentucky Derby. And if it ended today, the leading point getter is Plus K Parfait, who's scheduled to run in the Derby May the 4th. Plus K Parfait, what's that horse all about?
Well, he came into his 3-year-old year highly touted. He ran at the fairgrounds twice and was just awful. Ooh. And then they shipped him over to Dubai to run the United Arab Emirates Derby, and he won. And so, but we know from he earned the points that got him to the lead, because he had some points from last year. So we know from history that no winner of the United Arab Emirates Derby has ever won the Kentucky Derby. But I've always said, you know, there'll be 1 year where it happens, and I've fallen into the trap of picking one of those 1 year. If you remember the Thunder Snow debacle where he broke in the gate and bucked his way down the stretch. So that was not my greatest Derby pick, but that horse has turned out to be one of the best horses of the last decade. He's won the Dubai Classic a couple times, and I mean he's a very good horse. But I was early for the wedding on that one.
I got you. Michael Bachok, kind enough to join us. You talk about all these races. Is there a track record where maybe a horse like Maximum Security, who won the Florida Derby, does that race count more? Does that have more value than, say, the Louisiana Derby? Does the Santa Anita Derby have more weighted as far as when you look at a horse and handicap a horse?
As you get, well, in terms of the points, those races, the Louisiana Derby, the Bluegrass, Santa Anita, Wood Memorial, those all have the same point value. But clearly, you know, the UAE Derby does not figure into who's going to win the Derby as much as the Santa Anita Derby, where, you know, probably four of the last five winners have come from. So, you know, you got to take into consideration where those horses have run. And some of those races do produce, you know, or have a better outcome in the Kentucky Derby. The Wood Memorial has not been a race in recent times that's run in New York that has produced good results in the Derby. So, you know, you kind of got to look at that. And, of course, the Louisiana Derby, I don't think we've had a Louisiana Derby winner win the Kentucky Derby since, I think it was like 1996 or 97.
Wow.
So that's been quite a while. So you have to kind of take that into consideration.
Absolutely. Another horse with some Louisiana ties, Keith DeSormo, with a horse named Sueño, finished third in the Derby. What can you tell me about Keith's horse?
Keith's horses always improve as they get a little bit older and run a few more races. So he's run four times this year. He's finished in the money every time. The race that he ran in the Louisiana Derby was credible, but he is improving. Every one of his races, his last four, have shown an improved performance. That's a horse that, you know, again, he's in the 20 that could, if he blossoms, you know, during the week of the Derby, he would be on a shorter list of contenders. But he certainly knows, Keith knows how to train. And I don't know, he may get another race before. Keith doesn't have a problem running them back pretty quick. He may run in the Arkansas Derby next weekend, and then we'll get a better line on his condition at that point.
That race at Oaklawn. I guess, tell me, who is Baffert training? Because they always seem to have, he always seems to get the best horse, right? So who's Baffert
he
got
does.
In this thing?
All right, so he's got Game Winner, who is our 2-year-old champion. And as I said, he ran one time this year and he lost, but it was a credible performance. So Game Winner, I believe, is running Saturday in the Santa Anita Derby.
Yes.
He's also got another horse called Improbable, who was undefeated going into the an Oaklawn race. He ran in another division of the Rebel, and he ran a very credible race, but he got beat a neck. He's been a buzz horse since he first got onto the track. He's won over the Churchill Downs strip, which I think is very important. He is very fast. He's probably a little bit under the radar, but if he wins the Arkansas Derby, he won't be under the radar. But he won't be, you know, a horse like an American Pharoah or a Justify that, you know, those were just two wow horses. They always gave wow performances. But Improbable is a horse that could, you know, conceivably win the Derby and go on and maybe threaten the Triple Crown. I think he has that much talent.
Michael Bachok, BachokRacing.com for all your thoroughbred horse racing info. I see he's got Improbable. He's also got a horse named Mucho Gusto. They're going to be running on the same day, one in the Arkansas Derby, April 13th at Oaklawn, another one in Lexington at Keeneland on April 13th. So does Bob Baffert go with the horse he thinks? Is that a clue? Does he go to the best horse? How does that work? How is he in two places at one time?
Well, I think he's trying to give every horse the chance to make the Derby. and try not to run them against each other, because that creates problems with the owners, and you don't want problems with your owners. He's trying to keep them separated and as long as he can. And then, of course, when the Derby happens, you got to throw them all in the same gate and run them. But he's done a pretty good job of separating his horses, and I think that's what he's literally trying to do here.
Another horse, real quickly, War of Will, came in ninth in the Louisiana Derby, but he's scheduled to run in the Kentucky Derby as well. Mark Cassie, training War of Will. You like that horse, or is that don't touch that one?
I don't particularly. I picked him fourth. He was a big favorite in the Louisiana Derby. I picked him fourth just because he was going to be a very short favorite. And he had some issues coming out of the gate where he kind of lost his action and from behind, and whether it was a bump or a slip or something. But that's never – and he finished, you know, like you said, way back in the pack. It's just never a positive sign for a horse who should run very well to run so poorly. And I'm not willing to give him another shot in the Derby or wherever. It's just there's just too much that has to go exactly right. And he you know, that race in the Louisiana Derby did not go right at all.
So in summation, what you're telling me is there's no super horse as of yet. And there could be 1 to 20 horses out there that could win this thing, and there'd be another 1 to 20 horses that could win the next one. So it's one of those years.
It's one of those years. I mean, you know, we've always, and it seems like in the past 5 or 6 years, and I think the favorite has won the past 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
You know, you've had a horse coming in, and this is the favorite. This is the horse to beat. There's no horse to beat this year. Going into the Derby, and I don't care what happens, and you know, the Bluegrass or the Santa Anita Derby or any other preps, it's going to be wide open come the first Saturday.
Michael, thank you, Michael. We'll do it again closer to the race, buddy. Take care. I greatly appreciate it. NFL Talk next.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. The sounds of the NFL. Combine is done. Most of the pro days are done, and now the scouting really gets into effect, and now players are it never slows down, and that's why we called upon the Schwab, Frank Schwab, the editor of the Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports. Frank, what does the editor of Shutdown Corner doing these days when it involves the NFL? What's going on? What's on your plate?
You know, it's that weird time of year where you're kind of in between. You know, free agency's kind of dead. There's not a whole lot going on. If you, if you haven't bought anything in free agency yet, you're going to the store, and it's pretty much stripped dry. So, and that's where we are in free agency, but the draft is getting going. Off-season programs are getting going. There's still drama, the big Bleacher Report story today about Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy. I mean, it's just, people want, like, I have friends, obviously, who are NFL fans, and, you know, it'll be middle of June or early July or middle of May, and they'll be saying, where's the NFL news? What do we got? So there's just this need to talk NFL 365 days out of the year, and it's, hey, look, it's great. That's what the NFL has become. It's a year-round sport.
Yeah, I did. When I called you to come on, I didn't know about the Rodgers-McCarthy story. We'll get to that. I really was interested in Russell Wilson. He wants, the Seattle quarterback wants a new contract. Didn't he just get a new contract? Now he wants another one. And it looks like the whole league is going to be watching to see what happens next with the Seahawks and Russell Wilson.
Yeah, he did sign a new deal, but he's in the last year of it. I mean, it was a shorter deal. It was just smart for him. It was a 4-year deal. Now he's 30, and he's looking at, hey, you know, my contract's done in a year, and he can, you know, the market is obviously gotten bigger and you know, as it always does. And now he's in a great spot where, you know, I assume that maybe he doesn't surpass Rodgers as the highest paid player in the game, but it wouldn't surprise me if he does. He's going to get somewhere close to that. He's that important to Seattle. He's that good. He's still at a very prime age. So I view this as, you know, I think that we're, you know, Russell Wilson played this game well. He did. And now he's saying, hey, I guess he said this earlier in the offseason, but he said, hey, by April 15th, I want a new deal. That's the deadline. Now, if the Seahawks come to him on April 16th and say, hey, we're going to make you the highest paid player in the NFL history, I don't think he's going to say, no, sorry, the deadline's passed. But it puts a little pressure on the Seahawks to get this thing done right away, and he has a lot of leverage here, and it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see. I don't think there's – honestly, I just don't think there's any way that Russell Wilson's not signing a deal with the Seahawks, because we just don't see that often. It's just going to be interesting to see how high this thing goes.
I mean, he was terrific, and he was beloved because he was really good. That team was really good because he was on the cheap, and they could pay all these other players. And as it happens with so many teams, now the quarterback wants his money, and deservedly so, and the rest of the team suffers, and there's inordinately a drop-off. And we've seen many, many cases along those ways, and I wonder how beloved he's going to continue to be with his teammates and with his fans.
Yeah, you know what, I think as far as teammates and fans go, teammates especially, teammates understand, hey, that's his business. Hey, if he can get $30 million a year out of the Seahawks, good for you, Russell. I think it's very rare. That's why the Le'Veon Bell stuff last year with the Steelers, and man, they're kind of getting so upset at his holdout, was so shocking to me, is you rarely see NFL players, you know, not wanting their teammates to get as much money as they can. They're all kind of on the same side there as far as that goes. As far as fans, they love Russell. They should love Russell. He's great. And that's just, look, I think it does open up a larger discussion of what's going to be the team to – we all can agree here. The most valuable thing in the NFL is having a good quarterback on his rookie deal. We're seeing it with Jared Goff. We're going to see it with Patrick Mahomes. We saw it with Russell Wilson. I think the Cowboys kind of failed with Dak Prescott. They had Dak Prescott on his rookie deal, but yet they were kind of still tidying up the cap and not adding a lot and really haven't taken advantage of it. So I wonder if we get to a point, and who it's going to be, where a team says, you know what? We know the value of having a good, cheap rookie quarterback. There's a lot of good quarterbacks coming out of college now who are ready to play right away. We're going to gamble. We're going to trade. And I think a great test case for this, I'm not saying this is going to happen, it would be Jared Goff. Because what if the Rams just said, you know what? We can flip Jared Goff right now for, what, 3 first-round picks? I mean, he would be insanely valuable on the market, wouldn't he? I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm overstating that, but I think a good quarterback who's done what Jared Goff has done could get at least 2 first-round picks plus, maybe not a third first-round pick, but you're going to get more than 2 first-round picks. So you go, okay, we're going to trade Jared Goff before he gets paid his $30 million a year. We're going to trust Sean McVay to develop who we draft. And that's how we're going to reset this thing. We're just going to keep going that way, and that way we can stick, you know, 95-98% of our cap into the rest of the roster. I think it's a fan. It's somebody's going to do it, and if it doesn't work, they're all going to get fired. And that's why nobody has done it yet.
Interesting. Frank Schwab, Shutdown Corner editor, Yahoo Sports. All right, I'm going to read the headline from the Bleacher Report. What happened in Green Bay? A checked out coach, a tuned out quarterback, a soap opera where there should have been a dynasty. And those who saw the Aaron Rodgers, Mike McCarthy wreckage up close say we didn't know the half of it. I haven't read the article. I haven't had time, to be honest with you. Give me your Cliff Notes version of what you read and what you believe.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I mean, Ty Dunn, who wrote the story, a buddy of mine, and he's just great. He really delved into a lot of the dysfunction that's happened in Green Bay. You know, talking about, I mean, I think there's two sides to this, and then it comes together. The one side is, you know, the one prong of this is McCarthy. And it came across as very stubborn, you know, not wanting to, we've kind of known that. He didn't really want to innovate. He didn't really, I mean, he's talked about how hard he works. I'm sure he did. So I think a little bit of that's unfair, but it kind of painted him as a guy living off the past, not really willing to evolve, not really willing to trust any young assistant to kind of be the offensive guru because he figured himself as an offensive guru, and maybe that hurt him. Second prong of this is Rodgers, who has still had an axe to grind with McCarthy since the draft, of all things, when McCarthy, he was with the 49ers, and they passed on him for Alex Smith, and Rodgers comes off as a pretty bad teammate, as a guy who is really not the kind of leader you want out of your quarterback position. And hey, not all quarterbacks are great leaders. That's a myth. That doesn't happen. It's great when it does happen and your quarterback's a great leader. That doesn't always happen. So I don't think Rodgers, that's just not his personality. And it basically goes on to say Rodgers was so fed up with McCarthy, he's changing plays all the time. He changed about a third of the plays. Players don't know what should I do? Should I run what the coaches are telling me to run, or run what Aaron Rodgers is telling me to run? So I think when you got that kind of coach, you know, his issues with Aaron Rodgers and his issues, and then you have their relationship, which really didn't sound good. I know McCarthy was asked about it earlier this week by ESPN, Rob Dombrowski, and he said, hey, it was a challenge there. Coach Rodgers, we had a lot of fun. It was amazing what we were able to do, blah, blah, blah. Well, it sounds like it was a lot worse than that, but these guys just didn't seem like it didn't seem Rodgers respected McCarthy. It really didn't. Well. And I think that the next step in this is Rodgers going to respect Matt LaFleur? I mean, is the dynamic going to be different? Is he going to think this guy's really sharp and I'm just going to, you know, I trust him and we're going to run his plays? Or is it another thing where Rodgers, who's bigger than the organization at this point, he is that franchise right now, just kind of like Favre was before him, is he going to tune him out like he did McCarthy? I think that's a very interesting dynamic going forward. This was kind of story that, you know, go ahead, everybody should go ahead and read this, because I think it's going to end up painting Rodgers in a pretty negative light for the rest of his career, and I think it's something he's, perception-wise, he's going to have to battle going forward.
Yeah, I think ever since he was shown in that green room and teams kept passing him by and passing him by and passing him by, and then, of course, Green Bay takes him, and who does he back up? The mercurial Brett Favre, who did things his own way. So that's kind of his tutorial, right?
Yeah, it's always been a weird dynamic. I mean, and, you know, then Rodgers becomes this unbelievable player. And look, he's not the first guy to use dropping in the draft or something similar as fuel. I mean, Michael Jordan came up with every slight he could, you know, even if half of them were imagined. And really, it was Rodgers just kind of cut from the same cloth. So you can see how that would happen. But you can also see how when you're that, you know, it just kind of always looking for slights, always looking for something to tee yourself up. You can see how that can go sour in a hurry. And I think that maybe he's over that line a few times, and it's kind of rubbing people the wrong way.
And then there's a story about how McCarthy was fed up and he was missing in action. Players weren't sure where he was. For example, an assistant coach would run the team's final prep on the Saturday before a game, and eventually the word leaked out that McCarthy, the one that's calling the plays on game day, instead of being down there on the final walkthrough, he's up in his office getting a massage during those meetings. I mean, that's crazy.
It is kind of. That was the one passage in the story that just kind of makes you shake your head and say, you know, I mean, we could have, I don't know that we knew all of the stuff going on, but we kind of had guessed through the years that wasn't the best relationship, and that, you know, maybe McCarthy's offense had gone stale, and maybe the Rodgers wasn't the best of teammates at times. But yeah, that was the one passage where you're like, well, hey, McCarthy's getting massaged or something. What's going on? Well, I don't know. Who knows if that part's even true. I'm sure that at some point McCarthy's going to address this, and Aaron Rodgers is going to have to address this at some point when he, you know, talks during the offseason program. So it's just crazy. I mean, this stuff happens behind closed doors, and heck of a job by Ty Dunn to kind of open up those doors and give us a peek behind the curtain.
Yeah, I'm going to read into that. Since last we talked, the Alliance of American Football has folded, and now we're waiting to see what the XFL does with Oliver Luck running the show, and apparently he's gone out as far and wide to tell agents, we want to get players from college that have yet to that aren't eligible for the NFL yet, and we'll even get really good kids right out of high school to come play in our league. Do you think that's going to have any substance whatsoever?
Maybe. I mean, that's kind of, the XFL did that a little bit. I mean, they got Marcus Dupree before he was eligible. I think they did it with Herschel as well. So there's a little bit. I mean, that is something. Hey, if The NFL has a monopoly right now. They've kind of beaten this antitrust thing forever, but that's what it is. It's the players. If you are a high school kid right now, if you're an 18-year-old, and you are an elite talent, if you're one of these guys that could just, you're the number one recruit in the country, whatever, right. You have no option. We could all sit here and say, well, you don't have to go to college. Let's be realistic. You have to go to college for 3 years. That's just your path to the NFL. That's just what it is. And I've always thought it's wrong. I think there should be no ways with it at all, because we can sit here and say, well, that's not good for the kids. Well, let the NFL decide that. If an 18-year-old declares, don't draft him then if you don't think he's ready for it. Do you think that's going to happen? No, of course it won't. But they get this free scouting system out of it. So maybe that's a way around it. Maybe this is something that, I still think there's a ton of kids that they want to go experience college. They don't, and they're not necessarily ready for the pros yet. They want to play in the NFL. They don't want to go another route. They want to, I'm going to go the route that everybody else has gone because it's well-worn, and that's what I want to do. I want to go to the University of Alabama, and I want to play for the Dallas Cowboys. That's what they're going to do. So I don't think there's much to that, but the AAF folding this week was just, I think we talked about that as soon as it started, and it got off to that great start, we thought. I had no idea at the time that the business operations were in such a mess. It's embarrassing, honestly, to look back and all the, how were they not prepared for this? How did they kind of sell their soul to this, the Carolina Hurricanes owner who came in with this, $250, investment, and then he kind of just pulls the plug on the league when that was kind of always his plan. I just don't know how you could get yourself in a hole where you're basically giving yourself over to a league to a guy you know doesn't want to be there.
Yeah, you're basically owned by one person, and that's never a wise thing to do.
And I don't think they had the other option when they allowed him to become the main investor. Tom Duncan, I believe, is his name. And he's the Carolina Hurricanes owner of the NHL. He came in with this $250 million investment. I think at that moment the AAF probably knew it was a bad idea, but they had no choice. There was no plan B. Right. We have no money left. We need to make payroll this week. We just have to hope this works out, and it didn't. I just don't know how you get to the point though where you're in that hole at week two. What are you even doing there? I liked a lot of the things the AAF was selling, but it ends up that was just a sales job, and they weren't on a solid foundation as far as finances go. And it stinks because I like the idea of a second league. I like the idea of a developmental league, really. It's going to make the NFL better. It's going to make everybody better. But there's a lot of hurdles to cross there, and they weren't ready for that.
Hell has frozen over. Sean Payton and Roger Goodell working together to get a rule change in the NFL. Are you kidding me? What?
Crazy. I think that, Sean Payton said, right after, this wasn't a personal issue, this was a football issue. And that's a bunch of BS, and we all know it. This was Sean Payton at least being able to say, look, they admitted they screwed us. And I think everybody in your neck of the woods, it doesn't help. It doesn't make it better, but you kind of look and you say, well, okay, they kind of admitted, yeah, we kind of screwed this up. So, I'm interested to see how I like the new rule in theory. I'm interested to see how they kind of implement it, how they enforce it. If this ends up being a thing where in the last 2 minutes of every half, we're looking at every single play frame by frame to see if there's a pass interference call, I don't want that. I don't think anybody wants that. But I do want there, as I've said to you before, I do want there to be a mechanism in place to say, let's just take a look at this. We think we got this wrong, and it really seems egregiously wrong, and this is going to change the game, and then the Saints case change who goes to the Super Bowl. Let's at least look at this. Maybe we'd save the call, and that's fine, but at least we've had the opportunity to take a step back when this league moves at the speed of light. Officials are going to miss calls. The funny thing is people always talk about, oh, we need full-time refs. But that's great in theory. That's a great talking point. It will not change anything. Nope, because there's no way to officiate a game that moves that fast to field level. It's just, you're going to miss some things. I'm amazed that they get as many right as they do. I know Saints fans don't want to hear that, but it's a hard. So there's no way for the way the league has changed, the way the league has grown, and I mean that physically, these guys are big and bigger and faster, amazingly so. Now we have the technology. be able to say, hey, I'm going to challenge this. Go take a look at this. And I wish it wasn't just past reference, but at least we've taken that step now.
He is Frank Schwab, the editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports. We've got to talk about the draft soon, so we'll do that. But thank you for your time today, buddy. I greatly appreciate it.
Oh, no doubt. Hey, Don.
All right, buddy. You take care. Frank Schwab, the editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports. We're back to wrap things up here on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Everything you need for your travel extravaganza. Chips, dips, snacks, drinks, hot and cold, and that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner. Lenten season on Friday. You got all the seafood you could ever imagine and then some. Cleanest restrooms. They've got it all. DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. History lesson time on this day, April 4th. We go back to the year 1983. Considered the single biggest upset in NCAA tournament history as Derek Wittenberg's last second shot became a Lorenzo Charles dunk that sealed North Carolina State's victory over Phi Slamma Jamma and the Houston Cougars for the NCAA title. It is still believed to be one of the most stunning upsets in NCAA tournament history. Jimmy Valvano looking around, running around, trying to get a hug. They made the survive and advance 30 for 30 on that one, and it was very, very well done. On this day, April 4th, 1983, the Wolfpack of North Carolina State shocked the college basketball world and beat Hakeem Olajuwon, Clyde Drexler, and the rest of Phi Slamma Jamma. Wow, what a day. What a day. All right, if today, April the 4th, is your birthday, well, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. Hope you have a great day. Cake and ice cream. Don't worry about the weather. It's your birthday. Yes, indeed. You share with the likes of former LSU pitcher Lewis Coleman celebrating a birthday today. Iron Man Robert Downey Jr. is 53 years old today, and Louisiana's own sister to Brittany, Jamie Lynn Spears, is 27 years young today. If it's your anniversary, happy anniversary. Congratulations. Keep adding year after year after year to it. All right, special thanks to our guest today, Wilson Alexander, talking about the new approach from Antoine DePlantis. 7 home runs in this season alone. Far more than he's ever done in his career at LSU. Andrew Lopez on the Pelicans and their search for a GM. Michael Baychuk, we are exactly 1 month away from the Run for the Roses at Churchill Downs. He gave us a preview of who to think about when it comes time for that. And the Schwab on all things NFL. We certainly appreciate them coming on board today. Tomorrow, we'll get the very latest LSU baseball as they get ready, hopefully, weather permitting, although it does not look good right now, to take on the Texas A&M Aggies. The Aggies 6-2-1 in the West. LSU a half a game back at 6-3. So it's a very, very important series. We'll get you updated on the Raging Cajuns as well. A spring football preview, a Final Four preview, gymnastics, NCAA tournament preview. We will be jam-packed tomorrow. So come on back. Same time, 2 to 4 p.m. Same great station, 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com. CD, thank you for all you do. Thanks to all of you for listening in. And thanks to our partners that make it possible each and every day. We've got only one Thursday, April the 4th. Make it a great afternoon and evening. And come on back tomorrow. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.